Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Jay, it's Dave Weiner here.
Hi, Dave.
And let me just check. I'll be right back, okay? I want to be absolutely 100% sure we're recording, okay? I'll just
will do.
Yeah, it says we've got a conference call going, so I think we're okay.
Let's reboot the news.
Okay. So where would the reboot start today?
Well, I have something that happened during the week that I want to discuss with you and also lay out for our listeners. It happened in Chicago.
Okay.
The executives, executives in charge of most of the major news companies met in Chicago.
Right.
In a semi-secret fashion with the National Association of Newspaper Publishers and the American Press Institute, which is like a think tank for the industry that organizes a lot of these things. And the American Press Institute, API, presented its recommendations for what the industry should do, and it was understood that this newspaper economic action plan was what they were meeting about and moving towards. And so the report, which was not even published, it leaked out, presents a window into where the news industry's head is at now. So I thought I would just go through their six major strategies they have, and it tells us, excuse me, where the news mind is in a business sense and in a sense of adapting to change. And then we can contrast where they're at with rebooting the news. Fair enough?
Sure. Yeah.
So they have like, let's see, 5 major recommendations, and this is what they are. The first they called true value. You and I would call it charging for news. And they say in a very strange and fascinating proposition that I discussed on Twitter with my followers, but is also worthy of contemplation here, they say, establish that news content has value by charging for it. Which is a very interesting idea. Begin massive experimentation with several of the most promising ways of charging for news. So that's number one. Number two is fair use.
Should I be writing these down or
no?
Probably.
I'm just
I'll just say charging for news. Okay.
Charging for news. The second one is what they call fair use, which means get tough with people who are reusing our stuff, right?
Right. Google.
The third they call fair share, which is a pretty clever name, and their intention there is to renegotiate the terms under which aggregators and others contract with them for news. They're not getting enough. They're not getting their fair share, so they're going to renegotiate that, which is interesting because the same people who negotiated the bad deal are supposed to now negotiate the good deal. Digital deliverance, they call it, which means invest in new technology.
Wait, isn't this number four now?
This is number four, yeah,
okay,
digital deliverance.
Deliverance,
right?
Like
that's what
the
they call it,
deliverance.
Right?
They're gonna play guitar and go down into Appalachia, or
well, what they say. I'm just gonna read you what they say. Invest in technologies, platforms, and systems that provide content-based e-commerce, data sharing, and other revenue-generating solutions. In other words, develop new business lines that have to do with the digital world that we don't have now. And the fifth one they call consumer-centric, which is, hey, let's focus on consumers and users because advertisers aren't supporting us anymore, so these people are way more important.
So the PBS model, that would be like NPR, Pledge Drive, you know, let's get some money from the users, basically, right?
Something. They're going to be more consumer-centric. So
Is that it? You said
that's it. Yeah. So that's where the mind of the news industry is.
Right.
And
the so-called news industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think there's going to be much of a news industry with this kind of an approach to it.
Well, it's very sad. It is.
This is what Dan Conover called the suicide pact. Is that what?
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
this is how Dan Conover described it. It's a suicide pact. Others.
Quite the witty guy there, Dan Conover. It's like, I hadn't really read it in great detail, but now that I understand, it's, you know what it is? It's what happens when somebody gets up in a meeting, they have an off-site meeting, and they put up a flip chart, and, you know, they go into their little breakout groups, but before they do that, they make a list of all the priorities, And then each one goes out, each breakout group goes out, and they have their little meeting, and they come back and report, and everybody goes home feeling like, well, we actually, you know, did something here, right? Although everybody knows in their heart they didn't actually do anything.
It's worse than that. It's that their solution is it's protectionist.
Yeah. Wow.
And instead of asking themselves, how can we add more value, new products, new quality?
That's not even the question. That's
instead of
question.
Asking that, they're simply saying, how can we get our fair share for what we're doing now? And then they're saying, we should invest, but it's not clear. If they're declining in revenues and they're laying off people, how are they going to invest? So anyway, it's just a little glimpse. That's all I'm saying. This is where they're at, and this is going to be the summer of paywalls and charging mechanisms by which they attempt to survive by charging for what they do now. And a lot of people who have been hoping for a more creative response were kind of depressed by this. But
they're
I think it's
impressed or depressed?
Depressed.
And who is that that's depressed by it?
Well, people who are hoping that the industry can survive, people who are hoping that it can adapt, people who want to see it reconfigure, you know, redeploy.
Right.
And there's a lot of gloom and doom among those people. So what do you think?
Well, it's not a reboot. It's more like a, you know, more... I don't know. No, it's a death march, basically. What I think is there's only one way to approach this is that there must be some people in this world who love news and think the internet is a really incredible way to deliver news and to create news and to, you know, edit news and do the whole process. And, you know, take whatever money you have left, all right, and do what those people want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look where the excitement is. I must sound like a broken record because this is my, you know, this is what I say over and over and over again. Look where the excitement is.
Mm.
Yeah, it's obvious. It's in Twitter.
Run to daylight.
Right. Well, the thing is that the excitement is totally in Twitter, and the latest trend is that the editorial people from the major publications are participating. They're not just paying lip service to it. They're actually there. I mean, there was this big debate today, it's very hard. Twitter is not a good debating medium.
No, it is not.
It was really, 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 really hard with the 140 character limit. And that's the problem, too, is that a lot of these people are really good writers, too. So it's not like they need the crutch of the 140 character limit. They don't. They could be concise. They know how to edit, you know. I mean, that's how I feel about this too, by the way. I've invested many, many years in becoming a good writer, I think, with all due, you know, possible humility. I don't really need the crutch, but okay, so it's hard to figure out what they're all saying, but they clearly are interested and excited, and they get the same sense that you and I get, is that there's something here, we're not quite sure exactly what it is, but we want to be here when it happens, you know, whatever
cool.
it is. Right?
Yeah. Something else happened.
Jay, before we move on, all I want to say is that I'd love to just get a group of these people together and, you know, okay, let's accept the fact that 20% of the time is going to be spent them saying, well, we need to make money doing this, okay, right? So let's just, we'll sigh loudly when they do that, and hopefully they'll move on quickly. But the other 80% of the time is let's ask them, what could we do to improve Twitter to make it even better at doing what you already like to do? And as users, I guarantee you by now they already have some ideas, and in another couple of months they'll have a lot of ideas. They will know where the walls are because users always know where the walls are. And then what I would do is if they have any money left at AP and wherever, you know, then just let's build the damn system that the reporters want. Let's just give them exactly what they want. Forget about whether or not it makes money, you know, because my theory on this one is that when you have an idea that excites everybody, what ends up happening is that people pour money on your head. You know, it's like pennies from heaven. I put that Dean Martin singing that song, I put that into my Twitter feed. You know, it's like, just come on, let's have fun. That's the point is you've got news mavens there now. You've really got people who get news. They understand it. They love it. All right, they've got their head up their ass in some ways. You know.
Let me build on that.
Okay.
Because something else happened with the New York Times this week that was very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I noted it at the time, so did you. But the Local, which is their local blogging initiative, started originally in Brooklyn and New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
which is trying to experiment with extremely local coverage in a blog form with all the right values, which is pro-am approach. This has got to be driven by the community. It's got to be a place where people in the neighborhood can contribute, which I think are all good things to experiment with. And they did it in the right way, which is they didn't bank a huge amount on it. They just tried it in two places, and you see what happens, right? So one day it appears on the Local, Brooklyn blog, an invitation to users to help them cover the news. And they had a meeting they needed covered. And they were asking people to go and be the journalist. That's how they phrase it, which I think is very clever.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, be the journalist. And here's what we need. And they extended the invitation to go cover a key community board meeting for the Local.
What happened?
Actually, I haven't checked back to see what happened. But the mere fact that this happened is an event in journalism because it's the New York Times doing something we talked about on earlier numbers of this podcast, which is let's make the content of the New York Times the best that the journalists and the readers
can do. No, that's even better. What they did was even better. I mean, you know, you could say, let's go out and find some bloggers and link to them. But no, what they said was, let's go deputize some people.
It was
not
deputizing,
even bloggers, but people, you know.
Right.
Let's turn these people into bloggers. You know?
Right.
It's almost like while you're not looking, we'll trick you into becoming a blogger. You know,
so,
it's like they're starting
journalist.
To do the Pied Piper thing. Or,
a reporter, right.
Well,
so,
right, but who is it? You pointed to something today, another professor who said that basically journalism is, I forget what he said, but it was more of
an activity.
An activity, right.
Yes.
Well,
yeah, very important little
right.
post.
Of course that's what it is.
Yes,
know?
That's what it is.
And that's, you know, what you go to another, the whole thing that they were debating was TechCrunch, you know. And I kept wanting, and Jarvis, who, you know, I'm finding myself agreeing with him more and more these days, which it really surprises me. Hi, Jeff. said basically you can't see TechCrunch as anything other than just TechCrunch. It's not emblematic of anything. It's a culture
mm-hmm.
unto itself, which is obvious. Of course it is, you know. And that's why when the New York Times runs an article like they, you know, because not everything's so rosy over there in New York Times land, right? Because they ran an article today, two articles about bloggers, neither one of which was particularly respectful.
Yeah.
And have they ever, now I ask the question, has the New York Times proper ever run an article about blogs that was anything other than dismissive, you know? You know, condescending, you know, blogger, poor little blogger is hopeless or cute, you know, anything but that. You know, how about, like, sources go direct? Have they ever run that story? That might be a little bit of a problem, of course, if they reported on that, but it does seem to me one of the trends that's actually happening here.
I didn't get upset by that article.
No, I didn't get upset either. It's more,
and I didn't really care about it, and I didn't participate in the debate.
Absolutely.
I think it was very tired.
Hey, listen, before we move on off local blogging, I have my own hyper-local blog now.
I know that. But I didn't finish my observation, but I know
sorry.
That you
go
do.
Ahead. Sorry. Yeah,
well, I wanted to fit this in because just this step here of let's try and cover Brooklyn better by enlisting the help of
mm-hmm.
people who live there in some very basic journalistic tasks.
Mm-hmm.
I see that is the beginning of reclaiming
mm-hmm.
local coverage.
Yes, and that's a rebooting the news thing for sure.
Absolutely.
That's the New York
that's
Times
like the rebound. You know, it's like now we're going in a different direction. And the reason it's a different direction is that if you see this as a development path, then for that development path, the resources are already there. The resources are huge,
yes,
because the number of people you could potentially draw in is very large.
Well, Jay, what are the resources? Cab fare? What are we talking about? Maybe, you know, take a cab. You know, really.
Minimal. That's
crazy.
What I'm saying is that because you draw on many people,
right?
You have a lot of resources available, which is the people of Brooklyn.
Got it.
Read the
New
York
Times.
You
didn't need the New York Times to do this, but this goes back to something that you said to me when we were walking in Cambridge a number of years ago when I asked you, what is it that the newspapers have to offer us? And the word you came up with was authority.
Right.
And that's it, of course. That's what the New York Times is contributing. The fact that we trust them, to some extent at least, to get something real out of this, right?
It's not just that. It's that, let's say you are Mary Jo from Brooklyn, and you actually go to this police community board meeting because you care about it, right?
Yeah.
And you see this invitation, and you say, well, I'd go to these meetings. Why don't I go to these meetings and also write for the New York Times?
Right.
And what's going to occur to you, I think, if you're an intelligent citizen of New York, is, wait a minute, how do I know what a New York Times account of this meeting should be?
Mm.
And this is where the answer we already have from the internet. You need guidelines, right? Community guidelines, reporting guidelines. And basically it's a piece of paper. It's obviously it's a blog post. It's a URL. But guidelines. And when those guidelines are public, that means everybody can say, oh, so that's what a meeting story is.
Yeah, we haven't had those guidelines public, have we, before?
Well, we are going to get them, and there's many ways to get them, and it's not a difficult thing. So right there we have, I think, two interlocking elements for a rebooted system of news.
Yeah.
The pro-am invitation, right? Hey, let's improve our coverage because we need somebody to go to this meeting, and we don't have anybody.
Right.
And so it's the invitation, go cover the meeting, and here are the guidelines.
Right.
Now, just today, 30 minutes ago, I saw on my Google Alerts that Chicago Now, the Chicago Tribune's local blogging platform, right?
Yep.
Where they're saying, okay, this is our way of building a blogging community, issued guidelines. And the guidelines came from a blog post I wrote, which you are in. Which I describe, look, there's an ethic for open systems and there's an ethic for professional journalists and there's closed systems and open editorial systems and they are the same thing. They work differently and they have to have different rules, but they aren't enemies either. And he said, in putting together these guidelines, I was influenced by this post. So that's kind of cool because that's why we write blog posts, but it shows you what I mean. Open invitation, hey, blog for us at Chicago Now, and guidelines, two key elements. Now we have something to build on because the potential number of people who can contribute and who can follow those guidelines is huge.
Yes, absolutely. And the interest and the willingness
is there.
It is unbelievable. I mean, we're putting up a little coral reef here. Berkeley is a...
So tell me about this Berkeley project, because I didn't know anything about this. I saw it on your blog.
It happened really... Well, it's been something that we've been all talking about, okay? One-on-one type conversations. I'll be driving in a car with a friend, who's been a lifelong living here. She's been living here for, I don't know, 30, 40 years, a long, long time, and I'm sitting... where do we go to find out about, this or that, whatever? There is no place for that. And this conversation's happening many, many, many times. And so then it starts becoming a question like, maybe we should start a Berkeley blog, right? What do you think? And everybody goes, absolutely, because everybody wants it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was at lunch a few weeks ago with Lance Noble, who's also lives in Berkeley. He and I both arrived completely independently here. We were friends before, had worked together on a number of projects in different contexts, and moved from very long distances to more or less the same place. It's sort of weird coincidence. And So we both are relatively new to Berkeley. Berkeley has, you know, a transient population,
mm-hmm.
a lot of transients, but also a lot of people who live here for a very long time. So
mm-hmm.
Lance and I are kind of right in the middle because we're not transients. We both are homeowners here in Berkeley, so we put down roots. But we're also relatively new, so while we are familiar with it, we can live here. There's so much. It's an incredibly rich place. It's in some ways it's very unusual. In other ways, it's not unusual at all. It's a small city in a big metropolitan area,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of places like that
mm-hmm.
in the United States. In the world, there are a lot of places like that.
So tell me about the site.
Right. Well, it's called inberkeley.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's a WordPress site hosted at Dreamhost.
Mm-hmm.
Got all four blog posts on it now, so I can't say that there's a whole lot there. I've written three. The one I wrote this afternoon was 10 good places to eat in North Berkeley. These are the 10 places, and I couldn't stop at 10. I had to keep going. And my hope there was, and I knew that, you know, one of the things that happens, we have several mail lists here. There are a lot of community. There's like every street has a community association in Berkeley. I'm on like three or four different mail lists just for different threads in the community. And so you ask a question on one of those mail lists, does anybody know where I can get a contractor to do this? Or what should I buy in a water heater? Or, you know, I'm thinking of throwing a party. Where is there a good place that does catering or whatever? You'll get back a huge amount of response. So the question is, set up a coral reef. That's my idea. It's to set up a structure on which this kind of stuff can hang out and be made permanent. And then we're going to start covering stories. Like, for example...
Explain the coral reef first.
Coral reef is an interesting... I talk about
this. A metaphor, right.
A lot. It's a metaphor, totally. You know, if you go down to you know, the Caribbean, and you want to start a coral reef, and they do often want to
mm-hmm.
do this, like off the coast of Florida, between Florida and Bermuda and the Bahamas, they like to do this, just sink a ship,
mm-hmm.
and that'll do it. You know, after a little while, some animals will start living inside the ship, and they will attract things that eat it, and they will attract things that eat them, and eventually you'll start getting the formations that make up a coral reef. And
uh-huh.
and before very long, you can't even find the ship anymore.
Right.
But it's in the middle of this whole structure, this whole civilization, this colony.
Mm.
But it wouldn't start on its own. You have to actually drop something there for it to actually...
So what's a coral reef for a hyper-local news blog?
You start writing. You start writing about your community. You start going out and finding people. It's not hard to find them at all who you know, have... Because this is, like I said, a very, very activist community. There are a lot of people with opinions. So tomorrow I'm going to go interview one of my friends who's active in we'll find out. I'll write the report. He's told me all about the stuff he's done, but I want to get it down and just write it down, and I'll write a report. This is what, his name is Jeff U. Boys, and I'll just write that. Then there's the Hillside Club, which has been around since Berkeley history starts pretty much in the 1920s. And the Hillside Club was one of the first, it starts actually a bit earlier because it really grew after the earthquake, the 1906 earthquake, because a lot of people came across the bay because the city of San Francisco got destroyed. This is where they set up the new town. So this Hillside Club was started in the 20s, and it's been a continuing, it's sort of a coral reef in its own way. So I'm going to go there, get their story involved in this, and try to involve people. It's just pick up as many strings as you. I'm going to talk with Marcos from Daily Coast. He's a Berkeleyite. Was very enthusiastic about this idea. But
wait, there's something I don't get here. You're telling me that in all of Berkeley, with all the literate people there, that there is no Berkeley local blog?
There's no Berkeley. That's correct.
That's
and not only that, Jay.
I don't believe it.
Well, it's true. Well,
there's
okay.
no place to get Berkeley news online
Well, I'll tell you what. If there is, we're going to find it, okay? Because they're going to come to me and they're going to yell at me like you.
Exactly.
They're going to be very angry about me is that I'm going around saying that there is no such thing. But there is no such thing. And
right.
and here's the even more puzzling part of this, and then we'll move on. is that the little towns around Berkeley all have these things.
Uh-huh.
Albany has it. Emeryville has it. Oakland is a relative cauldron of these things. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Well, there's tons of these sites around the country, Dave. I mean, there's,
totally.
There's like, that's one of the most vibrant areas of journalism.
I met with Paul Grabowitz at the J School the other day, and I
Berkeley
asked him,
J School, what can you tell us about that?
And I asked him, what do you know about Berkeley local blogs? He says, no, now that you mention it, I don't think there are any.
Weird. All right.
Yeah, so we're onto something here, and I think we've got a wonderful name for it. And Lance and I are both so new to this that we don't know what we don't know, and so we don't know what the obstacles are.
I would underline that. But I love the coral reef idea. You know, it reminds me a lot of the idea of, but it's more vivid. Your image is way more vivid. But the same notion is there in the idea of the Wikipedia stub.
Mm-hmm.
This is a stub, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Meaning it's already got a lot of work in it in the sense that we need an article on Max Headroom, you know, the British television series from the 1980s. It's a stub, meaning build on this. We need, you know, we need more. And there's got to be a way to translate the idea of the reef or the stub to news.
Oh, of course. I mean, there's another analogy. There's the Huckleberry Finn story about painting, whitewashing the fence.
Mm-hmm.
The Pied Piper is another one of these stories.
Yeah.
There's a lot of folklore. It's a thing I learned. You know, it used to really bug me when I would start doing something. You know, in the early days of blogging, way early before anybody was even remotely calling it blogging. I would start a project, right, and then 50 other people would do exactly the same thing I'm doing. And I would say, why don't you guys go do something else? Because I got this covered. Well, you don't need to do this too. And nothing I would say, they would just flame me to go, oh, what are you talking about? Come on, you can't, you know, you just want to monopolize this, right? And so then it hit me that I could totally make lemonade out of this, okay, that if I wanted people to do something, all I had to do was do it first. And then I could even fake the protest and say, oh, you know, don't do this. And then that would only get them more interested in doing it.
So
that's one of the things is that, you know, by the way, you know.
Okay, I understand. That's part of the method is like just.
That's right. And therefore, inberkeley.com may not end up being the Berkeley blog, right?
Uh-huh.
It may be the other thing that starts because people hate what we're doing, you know? Right? But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because
doesn't matter.
We're going to get what we want, right?
Yeah, I understand this method. Let me go back to the local. I want to emphasize something that in that post where they announced this, your big chance, be the journalist, it says.
Mm.
It says, next week on the right side of this screen, we will launch our virtual assignment desk.
Mm.
Now, this is something we've talked about before on Reading the News when we discussed the Boston mayor race. But I want to also underline this, because here we have another element in the rebooted system of news. We talked about two, the open invitation, right, the pro-am premise, help us out. We can't do everything, you have to help us. And community guidelines, or here's how you do a report for the New York Times. Guidelines, right?
Right.
So here's another element, the assignment desk.
Right.
What I love about the assignment desk is it gets us out of a scarcity model of news and into plenitude in this sense. What the local in Brooklyn or Chris Lydon's news site in Boston or in Chicago or Seattle, the way we have to start thinking of a new system of news is, what if we had perfect coverage?
Mm-hmm.
What if we covered everything in Borough Park, Brooklyn? What if we covered everything in the Boston mayor's race? Let's game it out and create an assignment list where this is what we would cover if we could cover everything.
Right.
And put it online and organize it in a way And that becomes, as we said earlier, our request sheet, right? We need all of this covered, right? It's all important.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that we can get, the better our report
right,
will be.
Absolutely.
Right,
absolutely. Totally
okay.
agree, yeah.
The more
yeah.
that we get, the
it's
better
just,
our report will be. Now,
yeah.
here is where professional journalism isn't really ready for this kind of journalism because we know from the start that we're not going to get it all, right? And so we have to give up at the beginning any illusions of completeness or omniscience or the whole story or everything. Like we're actually trying for like a probability.
I got to tell you, this is so spooky because I had this exact discussion today with Patrick LaForge, who is the city desk editor at the New York Times.
And somebody
and,
we follow on Twitter.
Pardon me?
And somebody we follow on Twitter.
That's correct. This is he's PALAFO on Twitter. And because I had written a piece today where I said Twitter has become the newspaper of record. And I pointed to a piece, so I did a Google search on this and found a piece written by Okrent, Daniel Okrent, where he said, we don't want to be the newspaper record. And he goes into this long reason why it's such a curse to be the newspaper record. And so I linked to that, you know, not thinking a whole lot about it. And then I ended up getting a comment from LaForge about my piece saying, and of course this is a job we don't want. And so I asked him to explain because I totally didn't understand why he would feel that way. Mm-hmm. I thought Okrent was making a big mistake. And
mm-hmm. Why wouldn't we want to be the newspaper?
Why
record?
Wouldn't you want to be? Of
so what was his
you
answer?
That you've now got your monopoly. I mean, you won. And that's, of course, the problem. They did win, and, you know, it's like, well, now that we've won, we don't want to win, you know? It was, you know,
I don't get
big,
it. What was his answer?
It was, honestly, did not make a whole lot of sense.
Oh, okay.
It was, no, wait, the answer was basically the inverse of what, it was agreeing with everything you just said.
All right, well, let me...
They can't do it, but of course they can. That was back in the print days when you had a limited amount of space. Well, why not cover everything? Why wouldn't you?
Let me illuminate the dynamic here.
Right.
One of my favorite posts at PressThink was written not by me, but by Andrew Hayward, who was at the time the president of CBS News.
Uh-huh.
And I heard him say in a meeting that I was part of, a foundation meeting, that we have to give up what he called, this is his term, the illusion of omniscience in news. We have come to the end of the era of omniscience, he says, in news. And we have to sort of stop saying that we can do that because we're really bad at it. And if we were able to negotiate a sort of a more honest statement of what we can do, it would actually help us out, right? So I heard him say this, and I said, this is a really important thing you just said. Would you be willing to develop this as a blog post, right? And he said, I'll think about it, and I actually thought he would never do it, but he did, and he sent it to me, and I published it, and it's called The Era of Omniscience is Over. And the
but this is so much like the meeting you talked about at the beginning of the show.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Everything you say is, we've now figured it out. I think we've figured it out, right?
Let me tell you what he says in this post, and then
tell
me how we figured it out.
Sorry,
he says, the era of omniscience is over, and that we have to make a more modest claim because that is the way we will win back trust. You see what I'm saying? And so you become more trusted if you reduce the fantasia of your claim.
And do you agree with this, Jay? Or...
Well, I think it's what he's identifying there is if you can't do it, don't claim it.
Oh, okay. I think that's, of course.
Because that undercuts your credibility. And I think he was right to say we are not omniscient, and we shouldn't say that. We shouldn't claim that because that will make us less trusted. He was right about CBS News. It's not. It's not even close.
Right, but but I keep coming back. We want so much more information now than we ever did. So shrinking isn't the way you want to be going. You want to become more expansive.
I'm saying shrink your claim.
Okay, all right.
Improve your system.
Okay.
That's how you get back to trust.
Okay.
Now, we have, what, 35 minutes in?
Yeah, we got
five. We have source of inspiration and something else. Anything else we want to cover?
Yes. Very quickly, I need to mention the URL for our website because we never have done that.
Mm-hmm.
It's http://rebootnews.com, and you'll find the RSS feed there. You'll find all the back issues. And I was going to suggest very quickly that maybe we should start assembling a kit there that has some of the elements that you've been talking about in this episode, Jay, where it's like if you wanted to go and start a rebooted news venture, these are the basic
kit.
Things.
Yeah,
right, a
mix
kit.
And match.
This is your startup. This is how
starter
you start.
Kit. Yeah.
Right. And then we add to it over time. When you identify another element, right, you go scarf off of this site, you know. I mean, you've now got, what, three or four different things? I really want that to be a list somewhere that you may
It'll be a list.
Get. And I think rebootnews.com is a really good place to put stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we are kind of what we're about, you know. So then now you need to come up with an inspiration, right? I mean,
I have it.
You have it. All right. Let me have it.
It's an article. It's actually a URL.
Wow. Okay.
It's a 1999 article that appeared in Salon by Andrew Leonard called Open Source Journalism.
Hmm.
And it reports on an event that was a very interesting and, for me, inspiring event. When James Defense Weekly in the UK wanted to write an article on cyber terrorism, which at that time, 99, was a pretty new subject.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea, wait a minute, we can be attacked through the computer? I mean, it was unusual then. And they had a freelance writer in the traditional way do this article. And I don't remember exactly how it happened, but they got the idea of posting a draft of it because they weren't entirely confident that it had all the information it should have. They had this idea of posting a draft of it at Slashdot, which at that time was probably the most vibrant online community, certainly the most advanced in terms of how to harness the intelligence and participation of lots of its members.
Well, that would be hard to quantify, but it certainly was vibrant.
Well, one of them, let's say.
Yeah.
And they had this idea, let's post the article. And that's what they did. And they got back through the comment system at Slashdot so many interesting additions and critiques and problems with the article and all things that they hadn't even known about that they sort of called a timeout and said, you know what, we're going to redo this because we learned a lot of stuff that we didn't know and we'll be back to you. And they rewrote the article. They included lots of things that the Slashdot community had provided. They figured out how to assign credit to those contributors, and they published a better article. And Leonard saw that this was interesting because it resembled how things happened in the open source environment of open source software and other domains, and he put it together in or an editor did, and they conceived of the idea of open source journalism. And what was intelligent about it was simply that James Defense Weekly was open to the idea that lots of other people knew things that were important to its article and just figured out a very simple system using existing tools to get that distributed intelligence into its article successfully. And that simple thing lit kind of a match in my mind. And
Did it lit a match in your mind?
Because I was convinced immediately that this had to be possible in the news. And I'm frustrated. I'm still inspired by it. I'm frustrated, almost like angry at myself because I haven't been able to crack it more wide open. But I still believe that we can do that, and we're still trying to collect on the insight that we had in 1999. And so when I see even a little thing like the local saying, help mm-hmm. us cover this meeting,
yep.
It tells me that this vision is alive. Lots of people know what Andrew Leonard meant in 1999 in Salon. Lots
yeah.
of people have had that idea. And I am totally convinced that we are on the road to realizing
yeah.
the wisdom of that notion.
No, I think that's what we're talking about in this in these podcasts. That's what we're talking about. That's the coral reef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, let's keep rebooting the news.
Yes, boss. Okay, we'll see you again next week. Thanks,
Dave. Bye, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
You got it.